Chapter 6. Terra, the Imperial Palace. On Daylight Wall, Courland watched and listened to the night. He had hoped to return to find the silence banished. Instead, it was waiting for him, between the sounds of celebration, coiling around the lights in the dark. "This is the victory I have brought you," Courland thought. Perhaps the citizens of Terra did not feel the silence, or perhaps they were trying to banish it. Courland could make no such pretense. The silence of the dead regarded him from the depths of the night. There were fires burning out there, but they were the bonfires of celebration and thanksgiving. The flames of destruction caused by the moonfall had been extinguished, most of them. Towards the equator, one of the firestorms still burned, and the devastation would take centuries to repair. In orbit above Terra, there was more damage. The Void War had ended with the destruction of the moon. Many Imperial Navy vessels had been destroyed, others barely limped back to port. At least, the Orc interceptors had been obliterated by the shockwave of the moon's explosion. Earlier in the day, in the Great Chamber, Courland had listened to Tobris Eckarth read the tally of victory. Hundreds of millions dead. Entire regions of the Imperial Palace had vanished. Some of the craters were 10 kilometers wide. So much dust had been thrown into an atmosphere already dark with pollutants. Day had been banished for years to come. Terra cycled through the heavy gloom of evening to the most profound night. Ash fell across the globe, white and grey and black, an accumulation of dry, gritty snow. When Eckarth had finished, Courland looked at Kubik.
"Why did this happen?"
"The analysis of this event is ongoing," the Fabricator General said. "We may be years from a definitive answer."
"Then give us a theory."
Servos hummed. Kubik inclined his head.
"Our adaptation of Orc technology is still imperfect. We postulate that we failed to account sufficiently for the variance between our modifications and the originals. It is possible the teleportation of the moon would have been successful had the devices been powered entirely by our own energy sources. The attempted integration, however, failed."
"The Xenos and the human cannot coexist," Veritas said quietly.
"Well observed, Inquisitor," said Kubik. "We might hypothesize a technological conflict, one that was resolved with the teleportation of only one half of the moon."
"To where?" Courland asked.
"We do not know." Kubik waved his mechanical fingers. "The destination is unimportant. Given the energy released, we may presume that what vanished met the same fate upon arrival as that which remained."
The fingers coiled into tight spirals. The gesture looked very like frustration.
"These reasons for failure remain conjectural. We will need considerably more experimental data to obtain a more complete understanding of where we succeeded and where we failed. It is unfortunate that none of our sensors survived."
His optics turned to Courland. The gaze felt accusatory.
"The equipment on the Herald of Night was destroyed?" Lansung asked.
"Scanning and recording devices were," said Courland. "All circuits were melted when the kill teams were teleported back to the ship."
"Very unfortunate," Kubik said. "Very unfortunate."
Courland had felt little sympathy for Kubik's disappointment at that time. He felt even less now. The crowd noises that reached his ears were the voices of people who had experienced true loss, not the private disappointment of the Mechanicus. Yet the citizens of Terra were celebrating. Ceremonies were being held in every chapel and cathedral. The dead were mourned, and the Emperor was thanked. The ceremonies began in the false day and continued into the hard night. With the coming of night, the festivals began too. In the courtyards of hab complexes, on roofs of manufactoria, in the streets and in the marketplaces, the crowds gathered. They sang their praise of the Emperor. They celebrated the valor of the warriors who had destroyed the face in the sky, the face that had mocked them, threatened them, and shouted,
"I am slaughter,"
at the world for so many days. They celebrated the fall of the face of the beast. They celebrated as if the war had been won. Courland did not begrudge the people their celebration. That they could rejoice at all was cause for hope. But there was a sound he did not like. He had heard it since he had landed, after the Thunderhawks had escaped the meteor storm. He heard it now, two syllables that rose in between the prayers of the Emperor. He heard his name. He was the hero of Terra. He had returned, bloodied from Ulanor, only to wreak vengeance on the beast and banish it from the skies. He was the author of this victory. Courland accepted he was the author of this night. He wondered whether it was proper to call it a victory. A battle had been won at the cost of a new catastrophe, and the war was not won. He had only destroyed one of the beast's masks. The true monster was still on Ulanor, enthroned in the capital of his newborn empire.
"Congratulations, Lord Gilliman."
Courland winced at the use of the title. He glanced to his right. Veritas had joined him at the rampart. Courland grunted. He didn't ask how Veritas had known he would be here. He did wish it was Vangarich who was standing there.
"For what, Inquisitor?" he asked.
"For the Death Watch. For its official recognition by the High Lords."
"That was nothing more than what the Council had agreed to prior to the mission."
Mesring, he was sure, would still have objected. But Mesring had not been present in the Great Chamber. He was, it was said, resting. If so, that was an improvement over raving and screaming. Courland saw no downside to the Ecclesiarch's collapse.
"In any event," said Veritas, "you have what you wanted."
Courland refused to rise to the bait.
"If you truly believe that was my intent, you're a fool, and I don't believe you are."
Veritas nodded once.
"Politics are never your intent, Lord Gilliman."
He emphasized the title, reminding Courland of what he had become, whether he liked it or not.
"But politics are your effect. You imposed your will on the Council. They accepted the temporary formation of the Death Watch, and now that it has proven itself, they are forced to accept its permanence."
"Permanence? You think the other chapters will consent to its existence beyond the end of the war?"
"And do you think no further crises will arise which would create the need for it?"
This was not a debate Courland was interested in having, especially not with the Inquisitorial representative.
"What I think," he said, "is that you did not seek me out to offer congratulations."
"No."
The old man's gaze was lidded and dark.
"The Death Watch did well on the attack moon. Your strategy against the beast is sound. I am curious, then, how will you use it on Ulanor? How will you decapitate the orcs?"
Again, Courland wished Veritas away and Vangarich present. He did not trust the Inquisitor. Even though he would reveal his plan of attack to the Council, he recoiled from the idea of Veritas having advanced knowledge of it. Courland shrugged. He had no plan for Veritas to learn.
"I don't know," he said.
He was surprised to hear Veritas express sympathy.
"I do not envy you the responsibility of this decision. We live in a dark age. The orcs are stronger and more advanced than they have ever been, and the Imperium cannot do what once it could. We have fallen far."
The admission took Courland aback. It seemed that it was Veritas who wished to speak. "Behold a wonder," he thought. "The Inquisition seeks to unburden itself."
"I have read the Chronicles," Courland said, hoping to prompt more from Veritas.
"They are far from complete. So much has been forgotten in 1,000 years.
Veritas paused.
"There are archives," he began,
hesitated again, then continued.
"During the Great Crusade, we would have had the means to counter the beast's weapons."
"I can well believe it."
Veritas changed the subject abruptly.
"Have you thought about how the Death Watch will neutralize the orc witches?"
"What do you mean?" Courland asked, wondering how much Veritas knew.
"I have seen the Black Templar's data," the Inquisitor said. "The witches, I would think, are key. Kill them,
and you have your decapitation. Gulland sighed. Why did he think there was anything he knew that Veritas did not?
True, he said. How will the Death Watch destroy them?
I don't know, he said again. Dark laughter welled up from his chest. Like you said, if this were the Great Crusade, we would have the means. Vulcan mentioned a special force, anti-psychers called Sisters of Silence, who would have been sent against the witches.
The Sisters of Silence, said Veritas, so named for the vow of silence. They were warriors of a particularly rare sort. They were psychic blanks. Their mere presence disrupted a psycho's ability.
You seem to know quite a bit about them.
He wondered how. The archives of the Inquisition were deep, their memories long, but Veritas had the knowledge so easily at hand. Veritas nodded, but offered no explanation.
Such a force would be a gift from the Emperor, Corland said. If we could neutralize the green-skinned psychers, then decapitation would be possible. But as you say, we have fallen since the days of the Great Crusade.
Veritas was quiet for a long time. Then he said,
Not all have fallen.
Who hasn't?
The Sisters of Silence.
They still exist.
Veritas nodded.
I believe so. Some.
Where? Corland tried to say. His tongue refused to obey him. The silence he had confronted since Ulanor rushed towards him, and it was not the thing he had believed. It was not the judgment of the past. It was the presence of fate.
Where?
He managed, speaking not to Veritas, but to the silence.
Do you believe him? Thane asked. Do we have a choice?
Corland replied. They were in Thane's quarters, in the small office outside his meditation cell. There were the bare necessities for command. A desk, two chairs, a vox unit. A stained glass portrait of Dawn covered the lone window. The warriors of the last wall were stationed in the Imperial Fist's barracks at the base of Daylight Wall. There were too many empty cells, Corland thought, too many reminders of compounded loss. At least some were occupied.
He hasn't given us much to go on, said Thane.
I don't think he has much more.
Thane shook his head. The inquisitorial representative is urging you to seek a myth, using a few uncertain clues as a guide. This really was Veritas,
and he wishes to accompany you.
How reassuring.
He...
Thane stopped.
Me,
he said.
This won't be the only Death Watch mission, said Corland. We can't attack Ulanor yet, and there are other targets that'll make a difference. Mine is the ultimate responsibility and command for the whole. I must remain here. So yes, you and Squad Gladius.
Thane frowned. He drummed his fingers on the desk.
I will do as you command, of course, he said.
But you have another concern.
As chapter master of the Fist's Exemplar, yes.
What is it?
I have repeatedly ordered the return of the rest of the fleet. Especially after our losses, we need the reinforcement to fulfill our duty of defense of Terra.
Spoken like a true son of Dawn, said Corland.
I asked for nothing else.
Repeated orders, you said.
Thane nodded.
Most recently, just before we departed for the Orc base.
He picked up a parchment and presented it to Corland.
Is that the response?
Corland asked as he took it.
No, it's a message from the Adeptus Astra Telepathica confirming that there has been no response.
You have had no news from them?
Nothing more recent than what the Black Templars relayed.
The worst may have befallen them.
Thane nodded again.
That doesn't satisfy you, said Corland.
I have considered that possibility. It could well be the truth. I was cut off from that portion of the fleet, and there were traitors in the field as well as orcs.
Even so, all the ships destroyed without being able to send a single message?
That does seem unlikely, Corland admitted. That unlikelihood in those particular circumstances concerns me.
With justification, said Corland. However, what action can you take?
Thane grimaced in frustration.
None, he said.
You are needed on this mission more than you are on Terra, Corland went on, and as I told you, Veritas is going too. Thane let out a bark of mirthless laughter. We aren't just going where an inquisitor points us. We will be led by the inquisitorial representative himself. We will trust a high lord not to take us to destruction.
No, said Corland, we aren't going to trust him at all. He knows the way to where he thinks you may find the Sisters of Silence. Use his information, listen to what he has to say, but the mission is yours. You are a chapter master leading Adeptus Astartes. The Death Watch is not the Inquisition's to command.
Agreed. He'll try to assume that authority, though. That's a certainty. His tactics do not appear to be subtle, so far at least. His power grabs have been accompanied by a clear belief in his entitlement. All the same, be wary, especially when you find the Sisters.
You mean if, don't you?
No. Corland spat the word out. If he denied the possibility of failure with enough force, perhaps he could will what the Imperium needed into existence.
They must be found. Without them...
He stopped himself. Had he been about to say that unless the myths were discovered to exist, the war was hopeless? No, he would not permit himself so unworthy a thought. But oh, the weight of the defeats. It grew and grew, his shoulders straining to hold it up. Even the victories were partial, and came at so great a cost they were difficult to regard as triumphs. And so many victories led only to greater defeats. He and Thane had already found one myth, only to lose Vulcan forever on the blood-soaked ground of another legend. And now, another search, once again on the sword point of desperation.
No, Corland said again, when you find them.
You will.
Because I must, Thane said.
His face was lined with sorrow. He looked over at the stained glass portrait of Dawn.
Do you think, when this war has run its course, we will have destroyed all the myths that were left to us?
If we do, Corland said, we will create new ones, if we have to embody them ourselves.
On the landing pad of the pocket spaceport, Venand approached the warriors of Squad Gladius.
Politics, she said, is a disease.
The Space Marines were preparing the Penitent Roth to leave from the only launching facility within kilometers of the barracks that had not been devastated by the meteor storm. They would be departing within hours. Veritas had not joined them yet. Venand had guessed he would not arrive until shortly before the launch. Thane and the warriors in black looked at her, motionless.
You have no love for politicians, Venand continued. Look where the Council has brought us. But politics are inevitable. There is no cure for the plague and no immunity. Look at yourselves. The Death Watch is political in its elements, and deeply so in its effect.
Why are you here, Inquisitor? Thane asked.
I'm here to contain the damage of your current infection.
Worfist growled. You think we would accept the second Inquisitor on this mission?
When that Inquisitor is myself, yes.
She walked across the launch pad, stopping near the gunship's ramp.
I notice you take for granted that I know the nature of your mission.
If you're here, Abathar said, then you know. No games, said Worfist. State your intent or leave us.
I've already stated my intent, and you are all playing the political game whether you admit it to yourself or not. But you're right. I should be clear. You know Inquisitor Veritas and I do not work hand in glove.
You are both Inquisitors, said Forcas.
Which did not stop him from attempting to have me assassinated. He did succeed in having me deposed as inquisitorial representative.
And, said Thane,
you should think of me as a check against his game.
There was silence as the Space Marines exchanged glances. She waited in their midst. She did not withdraw to give them privacy. They would have to grow used to her presence. She watched them think through what she proposed. She had no authority here. She could only be invited. But if Thane, as mission commander, requested her presence, Veritas would not be able to overrule him.
Why do you wish to come? Straighten asked.
Because there is a great potential in what the Death Watch is and does, she thought. Because I won't let Veritas seize that potential for himself. What she said was, because I need to see what you will find. That, too, was the truth. Vangarich had told her what Courand planned. The Sisters of Silence, she had said. She had never expected to speak those words. Years before, in the vaults of the Inquisition's fortress, she had read about them and many other organizations that might or might not have existed in the far reaches of time. She had never believed the Order still endured. There was no reason to do so. The Sisters had vanished into a myth-shrouded past. What they represented? She had not yet allowed herself to articulate what they meant, because the hope of their reality still felt like a forbidden one. Yet when she had spoken to Rendenstein about what Vangarich had told her and what she planned, she had seen in her bodyguard's face the same need, the same desire to hope, and the same caution. Rendenstein understood. Thane was wearing his helmet. Venan could not see his expression, but in the slight cocking of his head, she thought there was understanding. You found one legend, she told him. I need to be there when you find another. A low, weary chuckle emerged from the helm's vox grill.
Is that all?
She grinned. What do you think?